When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Please have a seat, everybody. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome one and all to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Folks, today Congress dropped episode 3 of the January 6th committee hearings in prime time, 1 p.m. on a Thursday. Now, there was a bunch of video testimony, a lot of documents, a lot of questions of the two live witnesses, and this is what we learned. All the lawyers knew that overturning the election was a crime. They all told each other that they knew it was a crime. They all told everybody in the White House it was a crime, including the president. They told him, sir, it's a crime. He said, thank you for clearing that up. Now, let's go do that crime. Some of the crimes described today were procedural and constitutional, a little light sedition among friends. Some of them were more straightforward, like, what's the word? Trying to murder Mike Pence. And the first part of today's hearing focused on the now infamous plan to have Pence just reject Biden's electors out of hand. That was conducted by disgraced lawyer and cotton swab seeing where you're about to stick him. John Eastman, according to the committee today, Eastman knew his theory was complete BS. And to prove that, they called Pence's former lawyer and man who has no problem with the hearing part of congressional hearings, Greg Jacob. Now, Mr. Jacob recalled what he said to Eastman about a vice president being able to name who won the election.
John, back in 2000, you weren't jumping up and saying Al Gore had this authority to do that. You would not want Kamala Harris to be able to exercise that kind of authority in 2024 when I hope Republicans will win the election, and I know you hope that too, John. And he said, absolutely. Al Gore did not have a basis to do it in 2000. Kamala Harris shouldn't be able to do it in 2024, but I think you should do it today.
Well, it's just a classic case of do as I say, not as I coo. Then, really? Really? Okay. Then they played footage of Jacob explaining what the president knew about the crime and when he knew it.
Did John Eastman ever admit, or, you know, in front of the president, that his proposal would violate the Electoral Count Act?
I believe he did on the 4th.
Okay, the 4th. But that's 2 whole days before the 6th. And everyone knows the president's got the memory of a goldfish who played in the NFL. You can't judge him for that. Now, I will say this about John Eastman. He was a consensus builder.
Do you know if Mr. Clark or Mr. Morgan, is it Morgan, thought about that, Mr. Eastman's advice?
Yeah, they thought he was crazy.
I know for a fact that I heard both say that his theory was crazy.
I said, you're completely crazy.
That was certifiably crazy.
Yes. John Eastman got a rare 100% on crazy tomatoes. That's how you can tell someone's crazy. They do this. The committee also heard from former federal judge and William Shatner melting on a hot sidewalk. J. Michael Luttig. Judge Luttig is one of the most widely respected conservative legal scholars in the country, and today he laid out the stakes of this attempted coup.
The foundational truth is the rule of law. That foundational truth is, for the United States of America, the profound truth. But it's not merely the profound truth for the United States. It's also the simple truth, the simple foundational truth of the American Republic.
Is anyone in jail yet? No? Okay. Judge Luttig was unequivocal about Eastman's plan.
I would have laid my body across the road before I would have let the vice president overturn the 2020 election on the basis of that historical precedent.
Those are brave words, but based on his energy level, I'm pretty sure he'd have laid his body down way before he got to the road. Like, just first patch of grass that he saw. Then the committee moved on to the second part of their argument, that despite Pence's refusal to go along with the plot, the former president kept pushing pressure on him. People in the Oval Office on January 6th recalled a tense phone call between the former president and his Veep.
And at some point, it started off as a calmer tone and everything, and then became heated.
The conversation was pretty heated.
I remember hearing the word wimp. Either he called him a wimp. I don't remember if he said, "You are a wimp, you'll be a wimp." Wimp is the word I remember.
Yes, and this is true. I'm being told that the Late Show audio video squad has used cutting-edge computer technology to recreate the conversation between the former president and Mike Pence. At one point, okay. Sure. There you go. Nostalgia. At one point, Ivanka's former chief of staff described the salty language the former president used.
Did Ms. Trump share with you any more details about what had happened, or any details about what had happened in the Oval Office that morning?
The word that she relayed to you that the president called the vice president, I apologize for being impolite, but do you remember what she said her father called him?
The P word.
The P word, platypus, pumpernickel, paprikash. I don't know. Oh, that P word. Good thing Pence wasn't in person, or the president would have tried to grab him. To understand, sure, it's an oldie. It's a trip down memory lane. I know it's an old reference, but. To understand just how much danger the former president put his vice president in, the committee showed some dramatic footage of the crowd on January 6th.
Bring him out!
Bring out Pence!
Bring him out!
Bring out Pence!
Bring him out!
Bring out Pence!
Now, Mike Pence obviously couldn't respond to that. He is staunchly against anyone coming out. Now, even though, bring him out. Even though the president knew the rioters were in the building howling for Pence's blood, he still put out another tweet that further inflamed the mob, who shortly thereafter got very, very close to catching the vice president.
Vice President Pence and his team ultimately were led to a secure location where they stayed for the next 4.5 hours, barely missing rioters a few feet away.
Approximately 40 feet. That's all there was. 40 feet between the vice president and the mob.
40 feet. And I want to point out that 40 feet is closer than from where I'm standing to where my executive producer, Tom Purcell, is standing right now.
Thank you.
What? What was that? Today we learned that when the dust settled, Eastman knew just how screwed he was.
In fact, just a few days later, Dr. Eastman emailed Rudy Giuliani and requested that he be included on a list of potential recipients of a presidential pardon. Dr. Eastman's email stated, quote, "I've decided that I should be on the pardon list, if that is still in the works."
Hey, y'all, it's John Eastman. What up? Listen, no biggie, but remember that pardon list y'all were talking about? I think it might be kind of fun to put my name on there, because I've been poking around in some legal books, and it turns out breaking the law is against the law. And we did try to bring down democracy and meow, meow, meow. Anyway, if it's no biggie, I totally get it, but maybe we could be cellmates, LOL, TTFN. Now, but here's the thing, Eastman did not get his pardon, so he's not taking any chances. To just about every question asked by the committee when he was called in, he gave the same answer.
I assert my Fifth Amendment right against being compelled to be a witness against myself. Fifth.
Got it. Quick follow-up. On a scale of 1 to 5, fifth being the absolute worst, where would you fall?
Fifth.
Got it. Okay, right. One more, if you don't mind, sir. A couple more follow-up questions. What's the best Fast and Furious movie?
Fifth.
Fast 5, a classic. Finally, sir, what size bottle of bourbon do you drink at night to forget your central role in the darkest day in our capital's history?
Fifth.
Cheers. We got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, Stephen calls a family meeting. Now you can feel like you're in the audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater with official Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise at ParamountShop.com. Shop t-shirts, mugs, accessories, and more, and Late Show Pod Show listeners can take 20% off with code TLS20. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show products with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
Lewis, you know I'm grateful to everybody who comes on this show, and we have some amazing guests this week. What have we had? We had Woodward and Bernstein here, Emma Thompson was on this week, Bryan Cranston. But tonight, you know, there's nothing a host of one of these shows wants to see more on the board other than the words Tom Hanks.
And we icon.
That's what we got.
An icon.
Mr. Thomas Hanks is here tonight. So that is gonna be fun. Do stick around for that. Now, folks, I've been told that a lot of people out there watching consider me something of a father figure. In fact, for some reason, a lot of people on Twitter like to call me daddy. Even more confusing, some of them actually want a spanking. Now, I love being a TV dad, and I don't take that title lightly. And right now, things feel unsettled in America, and I think we could all use a little reassurance. So, folks, Dad's calling a family meeting. Hey. Oh. Hey, kiddo. Take a seat. Cop a squat, buddy, okay? We need to talk. Now, I know you're mad at me because I wouldn't lend you the car, but with gas prices the way they are, it's just cheaper for you to fly to your friend's house. I know you don't want another lecture from your old TV dad, which is why I've also invited your movie dad to join us. Tom, come on in. Listen, you gotta listen.
Champ, I gotta tell you, it is great to see you, but please put those muscles away. Look at strong, huh? You've been working out.
Buddy, your dad and I have noticed you've been feeling pretty anxious lately.
Yeah, Now, we know there's a lot to think about. All the changes going on in this country, all the changes going on in your swimsuit area. People talking about your swimsuit area. It's all pretty upsetting.
And you're growing up so fast. It feels like just yesterday you were crawling around on the floor in nothing but your underwear, eating spaghetti straight out of the bowl with your hands.
But we were all doing that back in 2020. So. You know, it's time to move on, son.
But sadly, we can't because COVID is still sticking around longer than we all thought.
Yeah, COVID is kind of like when your Uncle Bill stays with us. He says he's gonna be here for 2 weeks, but you know, he's not going anywhere until Janice forgives him for the whole buying a houseboat without asking her thing.
By the way, your Uncle Bill has COVID.
And also scurvy. But here's the thing, champ. I know how tough this could be. In fact, not to brag, but I was one of the first to get COVID back before it was cool. But it was never cool.
And look, we need to talk to you about peer pressure. I know a lot of your friends are telling you to take drugs.
So listen up, because we're only gonna say this once.
Take the drugs. Those vaccines and those boosters really work, kid.
And kiddo, we know what it's like to be your age.
The world can be so confusing. Sometimes you wish you were all grown up already.
Exactly. So you visit a magic fortune-telling machine, wake up as an adult, move to the big city, get a job at a toy company, start up a sexual relationship with an actual adult who doesn't know what's going on, which is really funny, but in retrospect, it's pretty disturbing. We've all been there, man. Yeah.
And listen, we know the future can seem scary, too. It's a tough job market out there.
But if you put your mind to it, you can still be anything you want to be.
Yeah. Just not a comedian.
Or an actor.
Yeah. Those are our jobs, and we cannot lose them right now. The market is killing me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I put all my money into old typewriters because it's important to unplug from the internet every once in a while.
That's true. Speaking of which, we need to talk to you about your social media usage.
Specifically, when are you going to accept my Facebook request?
What, are you too busy using the TikTok? Do we need to do one of our viral dances just to get your attention?
Ready, go ahead.
Fine. Hey, buddy.
Hey, you look at your dad's when we're TikToking to you.
Oh, buddy, hold on. Before I forget, here's your allowance, okay? I tell you to save it, but with inflation, you better blow that thing fast.
And kiddo, remember, if you ever need anything, we'll be right here.
Doing this. It's about damn time. In a minute, I'ma need a sentimental man or woman to pump me up. Feeling fussy, walking in my balloon. We'll be right back with Tom Hanks.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Welcome back, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to say my guest tonight is an Oscar-winning, great big old movie star. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Mr. Tom Hanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. You're kind of you.
The people.
Thank you very much.
The people. Enjoy.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you very much. What a pleasure it is to be in Ed Sullivan Theater here because, look, I don't know if you heard about this, Stephen, but...
Go on.
I'm in a movie called Elvis, about Elvis, the Presley one.
And,
This actual place played very large in our film because I played Colonel Tom Parker in it. I don't need to immediately start hawking my product, but
do it, baby.
I
do
was
it.
Out earlier, so I might as well get right to it, right?
Get to the heat of the meat.
You know, show the clip and I'm going home. Thanks, everybody.
Let's put some asses in the seats.
But the night after Elvis performed on The Ed Sullivan Show, 60 million Americans watched him on TV. I think there were only 60 million and two TV sets in all of America.
You're not joking.
Time.
It was something, it really was an extraordinary number.
This was a huge performance. And the very next day, Colonel Tom Parker realized that everybody in America is talking about Elvis Presley, so he is no longer going to appear for free on TV. After that moment, you had to either buy a record or a ticket to his show or a ticket to one of his movies or listen to him on the radio, for which Colonel Tom Parker got a few cents every time it played.
Elvis got something like, if I'm not mistaken, he got $50,000 to appear three times on Mr. Sullivan's show.
Wow, okay.
Which is a crazy amount of money
because
back then.
Because Ed would go off. He understood that it was worth paying money. And after that, as Colonel Tom Parker himself said, well, then, no, I'll be happy to put my boy on television, provided they pay the price, and that price is $50,000. And nobody wanted to play that
and
money.
There it is. Right there. There's Elvis performing in the Ed Sullivan Show on October 28th, 1956.
And it is somewhere right on this, right
around
that
here.
Stage. Right here.
Right around
right
there.
Right there
as
well, Elvis.
Yep.
And you should have just like a soft, holy light shining down on that little space so that we could see.
Not only that, but this is kind of interesting. Back then, the big vaccine that people were worried about was polio vaccine that everybody should have, but people were nervous about it. Backstage on that night for the public good, he got vaccinated backstage here at the Ed Sullivan Show.
For the common good.
Okay. You, just before we get into the thing, I have not seen you in person since 2017.
That's a long time, because we've
talked over COVID several times, had lovely long conversations, but you hadn't physically been here. First of all, isn't it lovely to be with people?
It's good to be in a room full of, you know, there is something in the human condition that requires us to periodically get into a big room with a bunch of strangers and have that moment in common after a while.
Sure, you exchange some sort of nutrient by doing
that. Well, I mean, there's something in the air that is emboldens the human condition, I think.
And it's the something in the air that kept us apart for several years. But one of the reasons we took it seriously, one of the first reasons people went, oh, wait, this is a serious thing, is you and Rita got it.
We did.
Down in...
Brisbane, Australia.
In Australia, okay, so...
And they immediately put us in the hospital. And, you know, I have type 2 diabetes and a few other things. And I kept saying, am I going to be okay? They said, well, that's why you're in the hospital, Tom. Well, what are you looking for? Well, we're looking at your heart. And how much oxygen you have in your blood, and whether your lungs are clear, and also your temperature. And I said, well, okay, well, what is my temperature? Oh, you're all right, you're at 37. I said, to me, when I'm not on the metric, is it like half a mile? What does 37, what does 37 mean? I said, no, it's all right, you're all right, you'll be okay.
Now, how have you been since?
I had COVID a second time second week of April.
Year.
Yeah, I had it a second time.
Oh, wow. So you had the Omicron probably.
I guess so. And it kept me down for about a day and a half. And
didn't
nearly make the news that I thought it was going to.
Well, what was the explanation? Since you were one of the first people that we all knew about getting it, and so how would you compare the two experiences?
Well, there was like 10 days of misery was a difference. That first one, my wife and I had very different, she had completely different symptoms than I did. I felt like my bones had been turned to chalk. It was really, and couldn't focus on anything more than I can usually focus on things. It's like we were in lockdown in Australia, and you had to do things like your own laundry, which is like, what? there's a thing in Australia, they are very, very, very environmentally conscious. So the washing your clothes takes like 3.5 hours because it's just very, very slow, doesn't use a lot of water, very slow. But drying them takes like 4 times as long. So it's just... So it was better actually to hang them out on the deck on little, you know, sun dry them. And then we'd go out there and I'd literally be putting t-shirts and stuff in socks. And I'm thinking, with COVID, I'm thinking, how did I get outside? What are these wet things in my hands? Where am I? And then you'd come back around to big brain fog.
What was the isolation like this time? Were you like
Oh, I just laid on the couch. No, it was nothing. It was not so bad.
Okay. I had it around the same time.
Oh, did you? How bad?
It was terrible.
It was terrible.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
Super depressing, actually. I don't know why, but Evie and I both got super depressed having it.
Well, because, you know, she had to spend the week with you.
It's true.
I mean,
it's true.
Honestly, if you had to stay in here, how would you feel? We're making jokes about something that is, you know, we'll remember for the rest of humanity. We'll remember. Oh, remember that COVID thing that still hasn't gone away.
But you know what's interesting is that, you know, I'm wondering how much this is going. People are going to talk about it once we've, you know, knock wood, truly passed through this. Is because, you know, the Spanish flu killed 50 million people
and lingered for a very, very,
very,
very
long
time.
And it's not like there's like lots of plays and operas in the
now,
20s.
Now, why is that?
No one talked about, like, you don't hear about in the Roaring 20s. You don't hear about the Spanish flu from the art of that time.
There's more, although there is more information about the Spanish flu than there is, say, about the Tulsa Massacre in 1921.
So that's true.
You end up getting this kind of like, what's the important thing that we should be talking about history-wise?
I think probably right now it's the movie Elvis by Baz Luhrmann.
Well, man, you can catch a segue like nobody else in the business, my friend.
Got to grab that brass ring,
that's
baby.
Right.
Got to paddle. Got to paddle and drop
right.
in.
That's right.
Now, okay. All right, I loved the new movie, Elvis. You play Colonel Tom Parker, as you were saying before. I mean, I always knew the Colonel was there.
You didn't know what he looked like, did
you? I didn't know what he looked like.
No.
I didn't know what he sounded like.
No.
I didn't know what he did. Who was this guy?
Colonel Tom Parker was not a colonel. His name wasn't Tom, and he wasn't even a Parker. His real name was Andreas van Kuik. He jumped ship from Holland, had no American passport, just wanted to get into the circus business, which he was.
Yeah.
And he represented a few, he represented Eddie Arnold in promoting his career. Then one day, he heard about this young guy who was ripping up a record that everybody was listening to. He thought he was black. Turned out he was white. And then he happened to see him perform one day in Louisiana at the Louisiana Hayride, and paid no attention to what the boy was singing. He looked at what the effect was on the audience. And it's one thing to see young girls who be excited by the likes of Elvis Presley. But when their 40-year-old moms also are literally having feelings that maybe they shouldn't have in public, he said, I might be able to make some money at this. Because ma'am, what was it that was so excited? Oh, honey, he's just a big hunk of forbidden fruit. And he said, forbidden fruit is sold at a premium in most supermarkets in America. So he jumped. He was a diabolical genius in every way. It's incredibly prescient. Kind of like invented modern show business and modern recording business, and no small part of making sure that his boy remained exclusive. You know, you had to decide to pay to see or hear Elvis Presley. There's a great. Some guys ask him, do you think that Mr. Parker, do you think that Elvis's popularity is based on his so-called sex appeal, his shaking and wiggling? He said, well, Mr. Wilder, let me tell you that. I have a vivid imagination myself, and I have listened to Mr. Presley's records, and to the best of my ability, as hearing them over the radio, I am not able to see him wiggle. So I actually have a feeling it might be a different type of artist that we are speaking about here. And he was absolutely, absolutely dead solid.
We have a clip here. It's you as Colonel Parker. And Austin Butler as Elvis. What's happening?
This is a prescient moment. This is the moment where the cultural zeitgeist of Western society changed forever.
Jim,
I wasn't fooling when I told those other kids I was going to buy them a Cadillac one day.
My boy, with me, you'll buy them two Cadillacs.
100?
200?
1,000,000?
An aeroplane?
A rocket ship.
Even not a rocket ship. My mama don't like me to fly.
Well, what about you, Mr. Presley? Are you ready to fly?
Yes, sir. I'm ready. Ready to fly.
Austin Butler, I can't say no.
Extraordinary.
Baz Luhrmann, Austin Butler.
We have to take a little bit of a break. We'll be right back with more Mr. Tom Hanks, everybody. Stick around.
Hey,
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Right there, you know who that is. That's Mr. Tom Hanks. As soon as the movie was over, I saw it with my son, and he said, "What'd you think?" And I said, "It's great. It's a great movie." And part of it was the Baz Luhrmann-ness of it. Because if you enjoy a Baz Luhrmann film, this is the most Baz Luhrmann-y Baz Luhrmann film, in my opinion, that Baz has ever Luhrmanned. And I think one of the reasons why is that there's a lot of like glitz and shine and like almost like jewels and gem quality to it a Baz Luhrmann film. And I can't think of a subject that could receive it better than Elvis Presley. Yeah, the actual thing I thought was, you know, this could have used a little more Baz Luhrmann. Because Elvis is actually such a huge figure that it can receive the kind of grandeur that Baz Luhrmann puts into a film.
I think this might be the first Baz Luhrmann film in which actually required all the bedazzling that went into it. Because, you know, all of the jumpsuits and everything like that, there's a lot of confetti. Every week we would take an old Elvis movie poster and make it Baz centric, you know? Like, it happened at the World's Fair, be kind. It happened at Baz Fair. Girls, Girls, Girls became Baz, Baz, Baz. Viva Las Vegas became Viva Baz Vegas, you know?
Did you watch those films growing
up? I watched
up?
Every one of them that I could
oh
get my
God.
Hands
Follow
on.
Follow that dream, oh, Speedway.
Oh, no, okay. And my former makeup man, Danny Strepek, who I did probably, I think, 14 films with, he did Elvis's tan for 4 movies.
His tan?
His tan. Well, Viva Las Vegas.
Sure.
Well, what do you remember about it? You know, he didn't do his scars, you know, or his black eyes, you know?
Sure.
Elvis was a good-looking dude. But right. He did a Harum Scarum, which was not one of the better shot in like 22 days or something
sure.
like that. But he also did the one you just mentioned.
Follow That Dream.
Follow That Dream.
Down in Miami, right?
Yes, he did.
Follow That Dream, wherever that dream is.
I'll tell you this story that Danny told me. On that, I don't want to say maybe, on a movie that Danny did, okay? There was a young girl who was playing somebody in the thing.
Yes.
And she was very, very attractive, and she was very thrilled to be in a movie with Elvis. And she went through the movie, and it was all fine. And on her last day of film, she came into the hair and makeup trailer, and she was just despondent. So what is it, honey? Put her hair on, they were trying to do a makeup or a mascara, and she just kept crying and crying and crying and crying. And she says, what is it, honey? We have to get you ready. What is it? We have to get you ready. And I'm trying to think about the euphemistic word that let me just say this. I just want to have sex with him. Is that so bad? I just want to have sex with him.
We have to take a little bit of a break.
Damn, okay.
We'll be right back with more Mr. Tom Hanks, everybody.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we're back with Tom Hanks, everybody.
You can even do that on Zoom. Oh, my God.
Mr. Thomas Hanks, one of the things that hit me, and this now, let's talk about Austin Butler here for
oh,
a second,
please,
because
yeah.
this performance is...
Austin Butler, can we just
hear Austin Butler is just extraordinary. You can't say enough.
Can't say enough about Austin Butler.
Not only Not only does he capture the voice, the speaking voice, the singing voice for much of the movie as well, the mannerisms, the dancing, deeply felt, deeply expressed emotional scenes, but the magnetism of the man and his connection with an audience. And one of the reasons why I walked out and said that's an absolutely great movie is that I kind of felt like I got an intimate look at the real Elvis for the past two and a half hours.
Yeah.
And it reminded me, his performance was so good, it reminded me that I'd forgotten that I have a little candle lit in my heart for Elvis Presley. And that there's a reason why there's all this kitsch and ironic love of him.
Yeah, he's
but
like
it's
a
not
Hershey
that.
Bar now, yeah.
It's absolutely, he's an absolutely magnetic, beautiful, gifted, once-in-a-lifetime
Now,
performer.
I'm slightly older than you, so I did not... But I did not see the 1968 special, which became known as the comeback special.
I didn't see that either, but I did ask my mom if I could stay up late in February of 1974 and drag my bed into my brother Peter's room and put their black-and-white TV on some boxes to watch the Aloha
concert. Oh, that was a big one.
Which is 1.5 billion people.
By the way, dreamed up by Colonel Tom Parker.
Wow.
Why would you go travel around the world when the world will tune in to see you? You don't have to do this.
Right.
So, yeah.
But the backstory on that was he couldn't travel around the world because?
Because he had no passport. And he would not have been allowed into the country. Shh. Don't, spoiler alert. Thanks, guys. Now who's going to see the movie now?
Sorry.
Oh, crying out loud.
Sorry. I'm
can
so
you not,
I'm so sorry. No.
Can you not do that?
Sorry, we can't do that.
But the I will say, because of Austin's power of it and also the basmatic of it all, from the 68 comeback special, you get a real different sort of vision of what Elvis meant to the zeitgeist, because he turned Las Vegas into a place worthy of superstars to go in there and, you know, not there's plenty of good entertainment, but Elvis being there, it was huge. I used to work for the Hilton Hotels Corporation as a bellman, and if you call me a bellboy, I'm going to crack you right in your smart mouth.
Really? How old when you were a bellperson?
Are you kidding? I was 19, so I wasn't a bellboy at all. I was a bellman. And we had for the Oakland Hilton Hotel, actually Oakland Hilton Airport Motor Lodge, I think is what it was called. But we had a thing of who was playing at the Vegas International, and when Elvis was up there, and everybody says, "Oh wow, Elvis is in Las Vegas," we were told to say, "That's right, sir. And if you would like help making reservations, you can certainly talk to so and so at the front desk." So I'd like to think I had a little something to do with the promotion of Elvis's.
You and the Colonel.
Just like always thinking. Diabolical genius.
Yeah. What I didn't know was that the reason why there was a comeback is that the original sort of what we think of as classic Elvis only lasted a few years.
Well, really, it only lasted from 56 to 58. Then when he came back, he was making movies.
Went into the Army.
Went into the Army. Yeah, of course. He went into the Army for well over 2 years. Came back, had a fabulous special hosted by Frank Sinatra. Welcoming Elvis back from, Elvis is back from the Army show, and that was a big thing. And that was the last time he performed in front of a live television audience. He didn't do it again until 1968, and Elvis was petrified at the idea of performing again in front of a live audience.
And there was all those movies.
Well, he made those movies, and look, there was, I actually think, if we could get seriously about the movie business, the first movie he came back to was called G.I. Blues. Juliet Prowse, he sang to a little wooden puppet, "I don't have a wooden head." It was a huge popular hit because Elvis was Elvis, he sang, he was in a uniform, and it was massively huge. Then Elvis made three very, very good dramatic roles for 20th Century Fox. Flaming Star, Wild in the Country, and some other, I can't remember. And alas, they didn't do well. And that broke sort of like a magic mojo. Because the four movies he made before he went to the Army were great movies. King Creole, Jailhouse Rock. They actually lived up to the promise of what he was going to do. But it was those three dramatic roles where he didn't sing, where he wasn't kind of like a happy-go-lucky thing, that made the audience and the movie business go like, I think Elvis needs to sing in all these songs. And look, I love Viva Las Vegas as much as anybody else, and Girls, 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 and I. But, you know, three movies a year he made for 5 years. That is a backbreaking.
What's the most movies you've ever made in a year?
I made six movies in a year. No, I have no idea.
Really?
No, please, no. Thank you.
Hank says, I beat Elvis.
But that was at a time where I was trying to get into every other Octoplex screen in the country. I was trying to do that.
Tom, lovely to see you.
Oh,
thank
lovely.
You so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This has been The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. If you're enjoying The Late Show Pod Show, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Watch The Late Show with Stephen Colbert weeknights at 11:35, 10:35 Central on CBS and Paramount Plus. And for more exclusive Late Show content, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Late Show on YouTube.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.